to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint.
This is Karina Hogan with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which I am broadcasting from today. I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which you are taking this broadcast from across many nations. I'd also like to acknowledge elders past and present, and particularly pay homage to the work that they've done to forge the way for us to be here today. It's a pleasure to join you here on Triple A's Murray Country. I'm Karina Hogan and this is Let's Talk, and this month, for the month of March, I have dedicated entirely to women. I did it last March, I did it the March before, and I don't see why there's any reason why we should change that up this year, purely because I think that our community, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community, is absolutely stacked with beautiful, bright, bold, intelligent, spectacular women who bring so much to the table. Sadly, in some situations, there is such a massive disparity between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people. And I think that those issues are so incredibly important to be raising this month, particularly around issues such as incarceration, the fact that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women, 37% of the female prison population, despite being only 3% of the non-Indigenous population. When we talk about issues around violence, domestic violence particularly, we know that Aboriginal women are much more susceptible to this. So these are the types of things that I'd like to bring up, these topics that I'd like to bring up that may be a bit confronting, may make some people feel uncomfortable, but they're important. I always say that we as a community are only as good as the ones that are mostly struggling, I think, because it's important to recognise that the vulnerable of the vulnerable need a voice, and they have a voice. They need to not be silenced by these big structures and so on and so forth. So this month, for International Women's Month, I like to call it, not just International Women's Day, I'm going to be focused on bringing those stories to the forefront, but also, and so importantly, celebrating our women, celebrating the resilience, celebrating the fact that we are still here, we are still alive. We still have such deadly networks with the women that are in our community. And this year for International Women's Day, they always have a theme, you know, those things, you know, hashtag whatever. But this year for the International Women's Day 2022 campaign theme is actually called Break the Bias. And so basically the theme looks at changing climates, and it's equality for today in order to have a sustainable tomorrow. This theme is said to recognise the contribution of women and girls around the world who are working to change the climate of gender equality and to build a sustainable future. Today we're going to be speaking with someone who has been a leader in this in the space of education and has done incredible things as far as advancing what they are doing at their university. We'll talk to her a little bit later on in the program, but I wanted to kick the show off with someone who's been on here. You may be familiar with this lovely lady. She has contributed to the show, particularly around Indigenous Business Month, which doesn't happen until October. But I thought, you know, given it's International Women's Day, and I think that she's pretty much the bee's knees when it comes to black business, I thought, let's get her on. Let's have a yarn to her about some of the deadly women in business. Let's prop them up for International Women's Month. Her name's Sinead Singh, and she joins me this morning. Good morning, Sinead.
Good morning, sis. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a while since we've had you on. But I really wanted to get you on because it's International Women's Day coming up, I'm coining it International Women's Month because I think we deserve a whole month. That's just my thoughts on it. But before we begin, can we get you to remind us of who your mob is and where you're from?
Yep, so my mob are Wiradjuri people, so both mum and dad are Wiradjuri. And I'm originally from Ngunnawal country, so Queensland, but grew up most of my life on Cumberbury land on the Gold Coast.
A lovely place to grow up, and it's International Women's Day coming up, or I like to call International Women's Month because I think a whole month needs to be dedicated to mob. But I'd like for you to share with us some really deadly people who you think, women that you think, Indigenous women at that, that you think we should be drawing our attention to, buying, listening to, hiring, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, definitely. I love this kind of stuff because it really is propping up not just Indigenous women, but also the Indigenous economy as a whole. So, yeah, I really want to showcase, I guess, those businesses, majority of small businesses that we hope to see them turn into medium-sized enterprises one day that you can go and actually purchase products from right now. So I want to prop up Jayala. This is a skincare and artisan soapery business based actually on Rajasthan.
How do we spell that?
Yep, it's J-Y-E-L-A-H.
Yep, Jayala.
And that's the handle as well on Insta.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who else? Who else is on your radar?
Yeah, another one on my radar is just released. Her first drop of products is Flybod, so Alyssa Leighton. That is FLYYBOD, Flybod. She's got an amazing range of skincare, and what makes this range so amazing is that they're travel size. So it's basically being able to take Luxe skincare with you anywhere you go. And it is 100% Indigenous owned and operated. So quite amazing products. She's just launched this year. She's got a range up already for you to go check out.
I always love to like go alongside you when you're telling me these deadly things and like jumping on and checking it out. I just typed in fly, FLYY_bod, BOD for Instagram, and this deadly little page has come up with a whole heap of what looks like First Nations women sharing information around beauty products. I feel like this is, there's some patterns in there from Rachel Zara as well. I love it.
Yeah, and you can see right there, like, Flybot is the perfect example. So what Alyssa Leigh built up around her business is basically operating in that thing that I always talk about, the circular economy.
Yes.
So your own mob within our own economy, because it can function well and distribute wealth extremely well. And it has sustainability within it. So she's obviously been able to demonstrate that even through her interactions with other Indigenous businesses, graphic designers, artists, you name it, she's done it. So
it's fantastic.
That's fun to watch.
Yeah, that circular economy thing, the thing of, you know, propping up other businesses in order for your business to continue, because also that's a bit of like a sustainable strategy as well. Like if you can work with people and include them and leverage off them, I mean, it can save you time, it can do all those types of things. Who else have you got? I'm sure you've got just at least one more.
Yep. I mean, the other one that I want to prop up is she's been doing this for a while, and it's conscious fashion, and this is Shani Robinson, and she's stepping into this world. She's always been in this world as long as I've known her throughout the years, but she's got a business called Conscious Fashion with Shani. From what I understand, I think her personal page kind of pushes people to see what's coming in the Indigenous fashion revolutionist space. She looks at cultural responsibility and how you can actually respect the land through conscious fashion. So these are the particular businesses that are showing, you know, basically showing the rest of the world that land have always been at the forefront of what we do through fashion and what that needs to look like to be able to respect both those very particular things. So, yeah, she's extremely smart. She's got a really amazing plan for her future, and it's all about giving back and it's all about that circular economy from an environmental perspective. So that's another one to watch out for.
Oh, I love it. So we had Jayala, J-Y-E-L-A-H.
Yep.
Check that one out. We had fly_bod, FLYY_bod, and we had conscious fashion. Those three are on the radar this International Women's Month, it's been so deadly to talk to you. Now, I just do want to run by you that the theme this year is break the bias. And so when we talk about business, how do you think that we as a country or how the business space can evolve and change in order to break any particular type of bias that may exist within the business space?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen this time again, and we've even seen it recently with things like blockchain, and it's that we're always behind the eight ball. It's we're never in front of it, which is quite annoying, and also, let's be real, it's really disrespectful to what we've always had ingrained in us. So when we look at our own people and that circular economy and how we've always been able to function, the way in which it works actually supports things like decentralized funding. It also supports entrepreneurship and how it actually all has to seamlessly support one another within a business model, every single aspect of running a business, essentially, and also being even creative within it. So one big bias that I want to see dropped is this idea that Indigenous Australians are primitive in their approach to business.
I think that
unfortunately a lot of even Indigenous people still do it. We do it to our own mob, but even more so, we're still seeing a lot of non-Indigenous people not even want to consider the potential of First Nations businesses and entrepreneurs. So I think that bias definitely has to be dropped, because if we look back historically, a lot of people would actually see that we were the first educators, we were the first scientists, we were
engineers, astronomers.
Yeah, exactly. And we were the first entrepreneurs. We actually knew how to never take more than what we should and live below our means, which is what you need to be able to understand if you want to be a solid and sustained entrepreneur or business person.
Well, Sinead, I have to agree with you there on the bias around, or the narrative that people tell themselves and other people about the primitiveness of blackfellas in general. I mean, you've only got to look at the 65,000-year history that's existed. It was a pretty sustainable approach, I think. And we've had these discussions before, but particularly Indigenous women as well, there's nothing primitive about what they do in the business space. You're killing it as a business consultant, business specialist, improvement specialist, relationship manager. You've done all these amazing things.
You are
a regular here on AAA Murray Country Let's Talk. So I really look forward to having you on again, especially for Black Business Month, which comes around every year in October, but I have no doubt in my mind that you'll be with us before then. So happy International Women's Day Month. And I look forward to chatting with you again.
No, same here. Thanks, sis.
And just before the break, we heard from Sinead Singh, an amazing entrepreneur who's done a whole range of things in the business space. She's running 7 businesses. I'm struggling to keep up with that just thinking about it, but she's doing a deadly job. And we've been talking International Women's Month because the whole month of March is dedicated to celebrating and recognising Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women right across the country here on Let's Talk on AAA Murray Country. And I have someone on the line who I consider to be quite an incredible leader in my own community, but also more broadly within the whole Indigenous community. When we talk about education and we talk about the importance of embedding safe cultural space for blackfellas to be attending university, to be completing, moving on to greater and bigger things, I think that this woman does a really good job of articulating what needs to happen and how we can hashtag break the bias in that space. So we're joined by Angela Leach. Good morning, Angela.
Good morning, Karina.
So before we begin, I'd like to say happy International Women's Month, first and foremost. And ask you to tell us who your mob is and where you're from.
So my mob are the Wobblebarra, and that's from off the central coast of Queensland, out in the Wobblebarra Islands. And where I'm from, where I grew up, out of Woodridge. So as we know, we talk about Woodridge quite often. Such a deadly place.
Oh, not me. No, jokes. Okay, fine. I'm from Woodridge as well. No, we do often speak about it, and you. Yeah. And
Most people come from Woodridge.
They certainly do. But you're working as the Indigenous Pro Vice Chancellor at the Queensland University of Technology, and that's been a pretty important role there, because you've developed some pretty amazing things in that space. This year, International Women's Day, the theme is centred around the hashtag Break the Bias, which looks at the importance of changing the climate, changing climates, equality today for a sustainable tomorrow. What are your thoughts about the theme this year?
I think that no matter what the theme is, the issues are exactly the same for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women, and obviously women of colour and other women, actually. Because I think that we can change the title every year, and we can talk about, you know, working towards being free of stereotypes and discrimination. But until we're genuine about doing that for all women, I think International Women's Day is really not going to live up to what it could possibly be.
Mm. So tell me, Angela, you work at QUT, which is a massive university. In fact, you've got over 50,000 students in total there. I'm not sure of the percentage of how many Indigenous students are there. How many Indigenous students attend QUT?
We have over 1,000 Indigenous students at QUT. We graduate a lot of students. We're the highest in the state for the amount of students that we actually graduate each year.
And so when you hear the words break the bias, and you look at the university setting, what sort of stuff have you put in place to break the bias?
When we talk about breaking the biases, and if we're just talking about women, we really have to look at the way women's programs are developed so that we're not perpetuating the power imbalances between women from the Australian hegemony and other women. Because when that happens, it reinforces, you know, harmful and kind of negative stereotypes about the other women. And in Australia, I think that's mainly Aboriginal women, but there are other women. So I think when we're starting to look at programs at QUT, some of the things we're starting to talk about is that, okay, if we want 50% of that to be women, what does that 50% look like?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I often wonder, and I've had this discussion at QUT because we have open discussions there, non-Indigenous or the women from the hegemony and middle class, are they actually already pretty close to being represented?
Yeah, right.
And is, you know, and maybe it's the Aboriginal women, the other women of colour, the women from other diverse backgrounds, poor kind of women, maybe they're the ones that are underrepresented.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe we need to start thinking about what does that composition of women look like? When we say we want equality for women, are we really only talking about one type of woman, or are we talking about all the women?
Well, that's interesting you should say that, because I've read your strategy or parts of your strategy, which is not just a 3 or 4 year strategy, which usually they are. This one is actually goes for 10 years. And it's geared towards, you know, increasing numbers, but it's also from about the quality of those people moving through, and what does the trajectory look like for those students coming through now and then in 10 years, right? And it's quite, yeah, it's quite well put together, I think. I really got a lot out of reading that particular strategy, particularly that you guys actually don't have a reconciliation action plan, do you?
No, we don't.
Which is interesting, because suppose some people would just assume that a place like QUT would have it, but can you talk me through that a little bit and why that is and what you have in place of that?
I think it's the way that QUT has developed. I think in the past we've had RAP plans, but if I can kind of take on a bit of a journey with me, like, so the RAP plans came about first, Prime Minister Keating in the early 90s talked about RAP plans being around rights and social justice. So it was like, yes, go, brother, you know, talking about dignity and hope and opportunities for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. But the time 1996 came about with Prime Minister Howard, he had changed the focus to practical reconciliation, which was focusing on areas of disadvantage. And it kind of gave the reconciliation movement a bit of a fundamental look, and that was just on practical issues, so not about systemic issues and not about things that are built in, discriminations that's built into the system. So it kind of changed it to being from rights and social justice to just being about, let's deal with the disadvantaged parts, yeah, of Aboriginal people. And I think that helped to reinforce the negative stereotypes around Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people being the issue rather than the way society operates or what we have happening in our own organisations. So I just wanted to say that that's been a bit of a movement for universities, but it's been a bit of a movement overall. But I'm not saying that RAP plans don't have their place, because I think they do have a place, but not, I don't think they really have a true place in universities.
Okay.
Because I think that universities should have moved move to a place where it should be built into what we do and what we are. There shouldn't be a separate wrap plan.
Kind of like your core business.
Yeah, it becomes core business. And if people want a wrap plan, I see wrap plans. Initially, wrap plans were only meant for like external and private organisations, because government departments and everything, they had plans already. You know, and same as universities. But if people are just starting off, I think a wrap plan's great because it gives you something to start with, something like, to kind of build from.
I hate to say it, but a few boxes to tick, right?
Yeah, and it kind of, it does give them that. Mm-hmm. And everyone has to start somewhere. And if you've got nowhere to start with, you know, and you can look at the wrap plan and say, well, I'll just start with that.
Yeah, right.
And then I'll slowly move towards building it in to everything that we do.
Building it into people's everyday consciousness kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think for us, then once you start to do that and it starts to become part of your, you know, consciousness, then you can actually move away from the wrap plans, although some of them, wrap plans are starting to move towards a social justice focus. Because what I did when I came to QUT is I started to look at the Uluru Statement of the Heart and started to think about the way QUT wants to go. And it talks about not practical kind of areas of reconciliation. It talks about reforms. It talks about recognition of ownership, policy change, structural reform, recognition of rights that are based in sovereignty and self-determination, you know. So it actually moves away from how do you help or close the gap in a particular area to how do we actually fundamentally change what we're doing.
Mm. And into the future and make it sustainable. And that's kind of part of this year's International Women's Day theme as well. It's about changing climates, they say. So what can you implement within your workplace, your home, within your netball team, wherever it may be, what can you implement that can change the way we see gender equality? But as you mentioned, gender equality is a little bit more than just gender equality. I mean, you've got all those intersections. You know, let's talk about First Nations women who may be living with a disability. I know that we can't speak on that from lived experience, but I think that this is incredibly important when we're talking about leadership and what it means to break the bias, you know, is that all women don't come in the same shapes and sizes, right?
That's right. And that International Women's Day, we have to fundamentally look at the diversity of women, which we don't do. And I think for Aboriginal women, no matter all our differences, and we are all different from each other, is we are all sovereign people.
Mm.
And when we come from sovereignty, when we come from a position of sovereignty, I think that gives us strength and it gives us a voice. So no matter whether we've got disability, you are a sovereign person and you're a sovereign person of this country.
Mm-hmm.
And when we start to think about that, and I think that is something for Aboriginal women that we really need to think about, and it's something that we can give to each other about having discussions about being sovereign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
if I look at that makes me think of Chelsea Wattigo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I don't know if you can swear on this, but NAF Hope and be sovereign.
Yes. and we all know that Chelsea Wattigo recently wrote the book, well, I hope that we all know, Another Day in the Colony.
So within that, she talks about from a very strength space, Chelsea does. And I think that for all of us, that's a gift, because some of us don't do that. Some of us have been beaten down so much that we come to accept what's given to us and we don't understand how strong our position is as a sovereign person.
Yeah.
And I think once we start to think about, like when my mob was talking to the education department about what we wanted on the island, it was about, you know, Auntie saying, I've told you this before, oh, why don't we ask them for this? Why don't we ask them for that? And I went, no, we are sovereign people. This is our country. This is our island. What are we prepared to give to them?
Mm.
And it's kind of like they went, oh, well, in that case, you know.
Angela, if you've just joined us, we're talking with Ms. Angela Barney-Leach, who is the QUT Pro Vice Chancellor for Indigenous Strategy. She began this position in February of 2019, and for International Women's Month, not just day but month, I'm talking to a whole range of strong Indigenous women who I think deserve to have a say in the theme this year, which is Break the Bias. And, of course, you were just talking about your involvement with the Wapalbara mob, who's your mob, and you happen to be a land trustee for them, I believe. Is that right?
Yes.
And this is off the Keppel Islands, off the coast of Central Australia, Central Queensland, rather. And recently you guys won Native Title. I always find it weird saying that. You won Native Title. It's like you won the grand final at a netball competition or something. It's just, it kind of blows my mind. But tell me about that.
It is interesting to say we won it. And I think that when we talk about, because they've denied our sovereignty for so long, that they then perceive that this country is theirs.
Right.
And so now we need to ask them for something. So when we've won it, it's almost like we've beaten and taken them off something that they owned.
Right.
When it's actually ours.
Right. And it's always been yours. And do you feel as though, like, when it was announced, oh, you've got Native Title, were you in, like, two minds? On the one hand, it's already mine, hello, and then on the other hand, kind of like, I'm glad it's recognised in the Commonwealth system?
Yeah, it's kind of difficult because when we were going through it, some of our older people in our mob were going, what do you mean we have to justify this? It's ours. You know, why do we need to tell them what we did and who we did it with and where we went and who we tell? You know, because this is ours.
Right.
And it was really hard. Sometimes it was hard having those conversations, even with my mum, and, you know, my mum, to stop her from going back to, but this is ours. I'm thinking, but mum, but this is ours doesn't stand up in court. You know?
Mm.
And so that, it's hard to think, oh, we have to fight for something that we've got that we own anyway. But so in one place it's kind of like, oh, I feel bad because I'm part of the system. You know, I actually played with the system, played that game along with them, and in some way I'm kind of complicit with the Native Title legislation, which I don't like.
Mm.
So that was a part of me that was going, oh, I'm complicit with the system, you know, with the man. And then in another part of it I'm kind of like, the elders are really happy that we've got this. It gives us a certain amount of status when we go and talk to the white fellas about what we want for the island. So there's all these good things on that side of it. And as far as going back to the island, we did it all the time anyway. We already had some land that was exclusively ours on the island. This just gave us a little bit more. But it also gave us some native title rights over the rest of the island.
Yeah, it's interesting that you talk about that push and pull in your own head, because I feel like for a lot of Aboriginal women, First Nations women, myself included, I always play out that in my own head around, oh, I don't know whether to be a part of that or not to be a part of it. You know, I work in mainstream media organisation, then I work in a community-controlled organisation, I work in community-controlled health, and then I also work in a mainstream hospital. And you can see some of the fundamental issues. Some of these places are drenched in racism. Right, and then when you go and you're a part of that system to some degree, it can feel really conflicting. I get that. Like, I can really relate to that, Angela. But I think that it's incredibly important that we are in these mainstream spaces and we are maintaining the importance of fighting and moving forward. For me, and so in order for me to be able to go, okay, well, my goal is to get more First Nations people's voices heard, including women, then I kind of need to find a route, and I may need to go through this route that seems a bit conflicting at the time, but, you know, it's, to me, it's a stepping stone to getting to where I need to get. But it's interesting because when we talk about women, there are a lot of women out there that don't need to worry about that conflicting feeling in their head, right? They just go ahead and they can do what they like. You know, there's no responsibility to their community.
That's right. It's just about, well, how do I get ahead? How do I get through, right. You know, talk about the glass ceiling. How do I get through that glass ceiling? You know, and there are some that when they do, then they go, how can I help others?
Mm.
But, you know, rather than it's, you know, it's a whole movement of how do we move through. And you're right, they don't have to think about, is this different to my culture, to my people, because this is them.
Yeah.
You know? They might be fighting yeah. their brother or something, but we're kind of like fighting an entire system.
Right. And it can be draining. Angela, tell me, what do you do, like, as a black fella? Do you lean on other sisters or titty girls in the community to be able to vent or to be able to speak these things through? What role do other First Nations women play in your life?
I think that all of my friends, except for maybe one or two, are all Aboriginal women. And I think that's what Aboriginal women need, because sometimes we just need to relax and know that nobody in that room is going to misinterpret what you're saying.
Right.
That, yeah. you know, that everyone's going to understand. You don't have to explain what it is before you say, I'm upset with it. You say, this happened, and they go, oh, my goodness, I believe that happened to me too, rah, rah, rah. You have to go, so, and be like, so?
Sometimes you don't even have to say anything. You just give that look, eh? You're like that look across the room. Oh, I get it.
But I think my relatives also are very strong. Like I do talk to my I have a cousin, Julie Rogers. talk to her. But I've got a great cousin who's the chair of our Wappaburra Land Trust, Velma. You know, so and Velma Grandma Green, some I know of. So she's really deadly. So I think that other women do play a big role in my support network.
Mm. And you also have some deadly younger Wappaburra mob coming through. I want to ask, so in the next, so this, you've been there since 2019, you've got this 10-year plan. So when
you're coming out this year, because what's happened is we had the plan, you know, in 2019, we're thinking, okay, we can go from here, and then COVID happened, right? So all the things that happened in the university space really hit universities quite bad. It hit the rest of the country. And so it was kind of like the environment's changed. Let's have a look at what we're going to do now, where we're going to build from now. And so then we started to... so it's kind of just almost ready to go, but we're just having another check and thinking about where does QUT as a whole want to go, and our strategic plans that will be coming out then. But that didn't stop us starting to implement some of the things that we think can be implemented anyway.
Indigenous content, Indigenous engagement, leadership so embedded within the strategy, and it does it so seamlessly, like it's almost like an expected part. It's not like this big black outlier that sits out there and, oh, yeah, yeah, sorry, we've got to finish this and then we'll tick that box. Just, you know, it's very much embedded. It feels very sophisticated, and I think it's what this country needs on a whole range of different levels, Angela.
Yeah, and what I particularly like about it is the Indigenous staff have had a big say in it. Because I said right at the very beginning when I came, I will ask you what you want. I will listen to what you have to say. Some of them have been there, you know, much, much longer than me. You know, I just walked in the door at the university. You know, they have a lot of knowledge and a lot of experience. What do you think needs to be in this? What do you think needs to be done to make it better? And so the Indigenous staff have had a lot of input into it, which is what I really like, because we need to own it. But not just us own it, as I say to the VC, the Vice-Chancellor, you need to own it.
Yeah.
And the Vice-Chancellor, and I've said it before, the Vice-Chancellor at QUT is very good, and she's very supportive of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander issues becoming embedded at the university.
It's got so much to do with leadership, but also with
definitely
the inclusion of everyone. So
yeah, and it's kind of what we were saying before. We need, in some ways, we need to rely on them to a certain extent, because I'm not going to be able to change the university unless I have the white fellas at the top.
I know. I mean, non-Indigenous, 97% of this population is non-Indigenous. So at some point there needs to be some kind of, I suppose you could call it reconciliation.
I think some kind of recognition from them of, and I think you'll see in the outplan, recognition of how deadly black fellas really are and a recognition of our sovereignty.
Well, Angela, this month is all about recognising how deadly not just First Nations people, but not First Nations people in general, but particularly First Nations women. And I think that you are a deadly leader. You've done incredible things in the space and or the role that you've played in working with other universities and establishing what I think has been really productive work within QUT to bring our culture into the mix in such a seamless way. I really think is quite amazing, Angela. And come from the humble beginnings of Woodridge as well. You know, come out of Woodridge.
And what I loved about Woodridge is, back in the day, you didn't really have, you came into Brisbane, you caught the train into Brisbane, but we were our own community, our all. And we were a large proportion of the community.
Yeah.
And it was great because, you know, there's a black fellow that lives two doors down, you know, or in the next street. There was black fellows everywhere. It was fantastic.
Well, I am just about to head down there to see my mum, and sadly they got hit by the floods there, Angela. So, yeah, luckily I haven't been hit directly by it, but mob down there in Logan. And just a shout-out to all mob across particularly like the southeast Queensland corner but also northern New South Wales who have been incredibly hit by the floods.
It's really sad. There's so many people who weren't insured. So if people can, they should give to, you know, help support people. Go and be in that mob army, you know.
So what I have noticed is that mob have come together to donate and to think about those mob that have been affected by the floods. So I echo that and encourage people to continue to support those causes. Angela, it's been amazing speaking with you again, and I just want to say a happy International Women's Month to you and well done on all the deadly work.
Thank you. And do you want me to talk about Jackson?
That was my next part. to finish off the show today, we're going to take our audience out with a song that you've chosen. What is it?
So it's Better in Black. Yeah, so it's the version that was done by Betty Rice, and that's local band that's in Brisbane, and the lead singer is my nephew Jackson Van Isselen.
I just think
they do a fantastic kind of cover. And I thought, isn't this really good? It's something, a song that was written by a strong black woman, and a song that is sung by a strong black man.
Deadly. It certainly is. And the Betty Rays, of course, performed at the Brisbane Blacks Festival. And this song, Better in Black, by Thelma Plum, has been redone by them on Triple J's, like a version, Triple J's like a version. Download it, listen to it, check them out on Spotify. It's the Betty Rays, B-E-D-D-Y. Rays, R-A-Y-S, and this song is Better in Black. If you've enjoyed this program, you can catch a repeat tonight at 7 p.m. or you can go to our website a little bit later on the day to upload the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here on AAA Murray Country with Karina Hogan.